Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the medical profession. We're hearing from the frontline perspective of Dr. Marion Mateos. Marion was juggling being a new mother and starting her first consultant role just as the pandemic began. Marion is a paediatric oncologist based at the Kids Cancer Centre in Sydney, a clinical academic at the University of New South Wales, and a clinical research fellow at Children's Cancer Institute Australia. Dr. Marion Mateos, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, Sam. Pleasure to be here.
You began your first established consultant role just as the COVID-19 pandemic was beginning. What kind of changes did you see on the front line?
Look, it was pretty dramatic, to be honest. I had been in my role for 2 weeks and just, we were hearing mutterings of this COVID-19 coming from China and hearing that the first person had stepped off a plane and had been diagnosed. And then very soon after, everything was shut down. And I remember just that sense of fear of the unknown, of coming into a hospital. I work in a pretty busy tertiary pediatric hospital, and really not knowing, was I then going to get COVID-19? Was that something that was very easy to transmit? Was it going to be something I was going to take home? And I think a lot of people had that fear at the initial stage, and we were still questioning, how was it transmitted?
And Marion, the start of the pandemic coincided with a really special time in your life. You became a mother for the second time, and you were beginning your career as a paediatric oncologist. What was that like for you?
Yeah, really great question. It's something that you reflect on, and now I think back and I go, wow, that was really intense, because I had a 7-month-old baby, I had a 4-year-old, very active. To get out the door on a normal day for anyone, it's always a bit of a challenge. But I had the additional overlay of this dramatic change in the hospital. We were suddenly pivoting to online everything, virtual meetings, 8 a.m. calls to see who had COVID in our patient population, who was heading to intensive care, who was a close contact, all of the logistics about delivering care and chemotherapy for these patients who either had COVID or had a query COVID status.
Yes, COVID status changed hospital life dramatically. Tell me more about what you saw.
Even to come into the hospital, it was restricted. Coming through the front door, there was always a queue actually of people who had to sign in and confirm that they had no symptoms and that they had not tested positive for COVID and that they had not been in an area where it was a high rate of COVID positive cases. And that was just the start of getting into the hospital. And followed by that, there were daily COVID swabs for people who were intending in person. So there was a lot, it was a huge change. And so I had to then factor in an additional 15, 20 minutes to the start of the day to just get myself into the groove and be able to start seeing patients. So it was a massive change. And I think everyone felt the fear of COVID and who would get COVID and how would you get it and how did you protect yourself best against getting it so not to fall ill or bring it home to your family.
And at this time, did you feel pressure to have it all? You had a young one at home, it was the start of the pandemic, you were treating very sick children, and you were acting as a counsellor for their parents.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you always want to be the best person, possible mother, best possible clinician, best possible advocate for the patient that you look after. And there was just this eerie sense that you couldn't, after finishing work, you couldn't go and do the normal socialising and catching up with people and reflecting on the day, or, catching up with your partner. My husband's actually an anaesthetist. He was going through a very busy period himself, so very long days at work. And so just trying to basically keep things afloat, I think, is what most of us did in that time. And I would say a lot of people are really just at this point in time, 3 years from the start of the pandemic, reflecting on how crazy, how chaotic that last period of time has been. And a lot of people didn't have the time to think about what their immediate needs were. It was about keeping their patient group safe and being the best possible doctor or the best possible healthcare worker for our patients.
And Marion, did you notice fear in your patients and their families because of the fear of the pandemic and the fear of catching COVID?
Yeah, definitely. And we also, for a large period of time, had patients being swabbed on arrival in the hospital, because with the patient group that I look after, that children who are going through cancer treatment, they are all really vulnerable, and immunosuppressed patients, as we know, are very vulnerable for most diseases in the community. And this was something where we know that they are at higher risk of complications, especially with those earlier variants. And we had that clinic set up outside, having patients wait for their results before coming into the main clinic area. But still, there was a fear that they would get it coming to hospital and that we would also get it. One thing that was really interesting in the early part of the pandemic, people were afraid to come to hospital full stop. So it was both in the adult and the pediatric space that there was a slight lull in people wanting to come into hospital, and then and some delayed presentations. I think that was for a longer period in the adult hospital. I've got a very close friend who's an emergency physician, and she describes people sitting around saying, literally, where are the patients, at the very beginning of the pandemic. But as people saw that, you know, that they needed to seek medical care, there were people presenting, but often quite delayed presentations. So, you know, we're in a very different space right now, but I think that's been a huge journey for everyone, patients, families, healthcare workers over the last 3 years.
And speaking of healthcare workers, you were starting your career as a specialist at this time, but what about the younger trainees and the medical students? It must have been so eye-opening for them to begin their career when the pandemic was hitting. What kind of changes did you observe to training in hospitals?
Yeah, so a couple of really important things happened. One thing is that when you weren't needing to be in a clinical area, you were told to stay away. And that meant that there were a group of especially junior doctors who were bearing the brunt with the nursing staff of that day, that immediate patient care. And yes, I still had to come into the hospital to see my patients, but it was very clear that when we weren't needed as more senior doctors, that we shouldn't really be in the hospital and we should be where it was safe, working remotely. And that was a huge burden on the junior trainee population, that acuity of patient care. And on also a flip side, those trainees, so those who weren't yet doctors, so medical students, were told to stay away because they also were not part of the key personnel needed to look after sick patients in hospital. So there was also that group of people who didn't have the usual experience learning medical skills, speaking to patients, seeing sick patients. And so it was really a time where everything was turned on its head and we had to adjust, and we had to adjust quickly.
And turning to more established doctors now, you've written two pieces in Insight Plus about the need for doctor debriefs. What happened to debriefs, in your opinion, during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, they just didn't happen in a regular basis where you might bump into a colleague and say, hey, you know, I've got this patient who's really unwell. They have concerning symptoms. I think it might be XYZ. I had a couple of really challenging clinical cases where I thought if I'd had someone in the corridor who I could just say, you know, what do you think? It could be these three diagnoses and I'm working them up for this particular one as the key. That's, I think, easier to do as an informal passing. There are definitely opportunities. Like, don't get me wrong, I had good support. And if I really felt like I needed to contact a colleague, I could pick up a phone. We had other avenues. But I think it's the loss of that spontaneous communication where you just think, hey, there's a patient who had, for example, a significant lung infection. Maybe I should start Bactrim, high-dose Bactrim. Maybe they've got, you know, pneumocystis. Those sorts of things where you might be umming and ahhing and thinking what might be the best next course of action, or patients who were highly unwell with COVID and we were seeing this cytokine release syndrome, which in a couple of my patients we needed to give tocilizumab, which is a, you know, it blocks that immune response and is also given in non-immunocompromised patients. And, you know, the first time I thought, hey, wow, maybe this is actually when I need to be giving this drug. This was learning for everyone. It wasn't like something I had learnt at medical school. No one knew about COVID-19 then. So it was just those sorts of opportunities where we all earned our stripes. I think some of us were a little bit more isolated professionally than we realised. And that's something through writing these two articles, I felt and I reflected on how we're perhaps moving forward, we can take some key learnings from the pandemic to make us better doctors, better colleagues going forward.
And looking at where things are now, we're 3 years on, have things recovered or are we into a new normal?
I think it's a bit of both. And the word recovery is an interesting one. I would say if you look at the COVID cases, we're in another spike now, aren't we? There's a lot of people off with COVID. It's just that we're dealing with it in a slightly different way at a community level. We're still seeing the need to, in at least the pediatric hospital, we still isolate for patients who have COVID-19. We still have to organise our logistics around giving chemotherapy. Do we delay? Do we just give it in an isolation room in a different location in the hospital? We're also seeing a very tired workforce. So I think a lot of people are really probably just realising that they are quite burnt out from this whole last 3 years and just understanding what is it that happened. You know, this is it's a once in a lifetime experience that I think we've all been through. And what actually was that? What do you call it? And is there something that I can do better going forward to look after myself? I think a lot of people didn't really focus on their own individual needs. They just said, hey, this is a pandemic. I just need to move forward. And this is what I need to do to look after the patients going forward. And there were protocols that had to be updated, you know, very quickly, you know, new ways to look after patients in different parts of the hospital. So I think it was something that hopefully we don't have to go through in the same way in future. COVID's still around, don't get me wrong. We're still wearing masks in our hospital at least. I'm not sure what's happening in other parts of the world, but it's something that is a new normal. I think we still need to be very cognizant of the immunocompromised and vulnerable patients in our community, still be getting out the need for things like booster shots where it's applicable to try and protect those vulnerable patients and protect ourselves.
My special guest today is Dr. Marian Mateos, a paediatric oncologist based at the Kids Cancer Centre in Sydney, a clinical academic at the University of New South Wales, and a clinical research fellow at Children's Cancer Institute, Australia. Marian, what are some of the silver linings you've drawn from the pandemic?
Yeah, so there have been silver linings. So the ability to do virtual meetings and virtual conferences was actually really helpful, especially with a young family. I think people, at least what I observed, people were kinder as a result of like everyone collectively going through such a crazy time and understanding that actually that isolation period when we could only move 5 kilometres from our home and had that lack of interaction with our close family and friends, people I think then became really grateful for when we started to have those in-person gatherings. But I think it's really understanding there have been some silver linings. We have also come, I think, through it stronger just in terms of trying to develop some of those quick turning, pivoting in the health system and ingenuity and creativity. I think our health system managed it really very well and there were a lot of lives saved from that perspective. So I think we can be proud of our system. I think that's important to take forward. But I think going forward, we also need to look at how can we improve? How can we take the small wins? How can we be grateful for when a patient's doing really well? And lastly, there will be times, unfortunately, where things happen that are outside of our control. So for me, it was understanding that despite my best efforts, that I wasn't always able to get the outcome that I wanted for my patient. And it was about understanding that I had tried everything, but that part was out of my control.
And Marian, in your opinion, what kind of mark has the pandemic left on medicine and left on the medical community?
Yeah, COVID really rewrote the rule book. So from being an in-person daily contact type of profession, we have communication with a lot of different team members. So it's not just doctors, we've got nurses, we've got all of our physios, OTs, all the other allied health team that are really important to be able to care for patients. We lost that in-person ability to communicate and all became mostly virtual. There were still the treatment days where you had to come in person and see patients and deliver care, and then there was an opportunity. Actually, it was almost refreshing to be able to see other people in person and to be able to discuss patients and be knowing you were important in delivering that patient care. But I do think that we really were unprepared for something like this, and we're all just now, I think, realizing what happened in these last 3 years. It was very complex because at the time we just got on with it and we just had to do what we needed to do to deliver the best care for our patients. And I remember just thinking about the fear and about what was going to happen next to my patient. Was I going to be able to deliver the chemotherapy because they were just COVID positive, and how sick were they going to get? And there was a lot of stuff that happened, feeling more isolated, I think, because we didn't have those in-person regular interactions, more isolated and having very sick patients. And you often wonder, what can I do differently? What can I do better for my patients? But at the end of the day, a lot of it is outside of our control.
Dr. Marian Mateos, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure.
My special guest today has been Dr. Marian Mateos, a paediatric oncologist based at the Kids Cancer Centre in Sydney, a clinical academic at the University of New South Wales, and a clinical research fellow at Children's Cancer Institute Australia. You can listen to more MJA podcasts on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks very much for listening.